The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share with you information from various medical sources. First, the People's Pharmacy. Saffron supplement may help save eyesight. I was diagnosed with age-related macular degeneration in 2014 and immediately read up on what I could do to prevent blindness. In addition to taking AREDS-2, AREDS-2, I found that there is a supplement that can reduce, prevent, and even improve this condition. The supplement is saffron. Clinical studies have shown that it is anti-inflammatory and helpful for macular degeneration. I started taking saffron soon after diagnosis, and in 6 months my eyesight improved. It has been stable since. I ordered mine from New Zealand. Some eye vitamin supplements also have been adding saffron to the formula because of this research. Answer: your story intrigued us because we weren't aware that saffron is being used to treat age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. This condition leads to a loss of sharp vision in the center of the retina, the macula. As a result, people find it hard to focus on the details of items in front of them, faces, signs, or pages in a book. Researchers have been investigating the antioxidant spice saffron for its ability to protect the retina. So far, the clinical trials have been promising but small, and it's cited in Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine, July 18, 2012, and the Journal of Translational Medicine, September 25, 2013, and the Medical Hypothesis Discovery and Innovation Ophthalmology Journal, Spring 2016. These studies demonstrate that saffron as a supplement can stabilize the retina for up to 6 months in people with early stage AMD. We'd love to see larger, well-designed studies on this interesting supplement. Question: I've heard that rosemary oil is good for treating acne on the scalp. Is this true? I need alternatives to antibiotics. Rosemary extract has been shown to possess both anti-inflammatory and antimicrobial activity. In particular, it can inhibit the inflammation caused by the bacteria that cause acne, cited in the Journal of Medicinal Food, April 2013. Question: you have written that Tamiflu can help people recover more quickly from influenza. I don't think it works. I came down with the flu and called my doctor's office. It took a week for them to fit me into the schedule. The doctor did a test and confirmed I had influenza. He gave me a prescription for Tamiflu, but it didn't do anything for me. It took another week before I felt better. Why all the hype for a drug that doesn't work? Answer: Tamiflu is an oral antiviral medication for influenza. It works by blocking an enzyme the virus uses to spread throughout the body. To be maximally effective, Tamiflu should be taken within 48 hours of the first symptoms. It still may be somewhat helpful taken up to 4 days after flu symptoms begin. In your case, though, too much time had passed for Tamiflu to provide any benefit. Even under the best of circumstances, clinical trials show that Tamiflu shortens flu symptoms by a day or two. The drug may, however, reduce the chance of complications, cited in Medical Letter, January 1st, 2018. Question: I don't mind taking generic drugs because I can't afford brand-name medicines. My doctor prescribed sertraline for depression and anxiety. The first version made me dizzy and gave me tremors. It also didn't do much for my depression. I switched to Greenstone sertraline, and that worked much better. I have learned that Greenstone stopped making sertraline. What will I do? Answer: sertraline is the generic name for the antidepressant Zoloft. Until recently, Greenstone offered an authorized generic identical to the brand name drug. If you wanted to buy the brand name, it could cost over $300 for a month's supply. In contrast, the generic is under $15 a month at most pharmacies. But, as you've pointed out, you won't know how you will do on a particular generic until you try it. It is possible to purchase brand name Zoloft from a reputable Canadian online pharmacy. The cost for a month's supply is between $40 and $80. Be careful, though. Rogue online pharmacies sell counterfeit medications. From the New York Times, by Gina Collada, scientists discover new risk for heart disease. It has been one of the vexing questions in medicine. Why is it that most people who have heart attacks or strokes have few or no conventional risk factors? These are patients with normal levels of cholesterol and blood pressure, no history of smoking or diabetes, and no family history of cardiovascular disease. Why aren't they spared? To some researchers, this hidden risk is the dark matter of cardiology, an invisible but omnipresent force that lands tens of thousands of patients in the hospital each year. But now scientists may have gotten a glimpse of part of it. They have learned that a bizarre accumulation of mutated stem cells in bone marrow increases a person's risk of dying within a decade, usually from a heart attack or stroke, by 40 or 50%. They named the condition with medical jargon clonal hematopoiesis of indeterminate potential. CHIP, C-H-I-P, has emerged as a risk for heart attack and stroke that is as powerful as high LDL or high blood pressure, but it acts independently of them, and CHIP is not uncommon. The condition becomes more likely with age. Up to 20% of people in their 60s have it, and perhaps 50% of those in their 80s. It is beginning to appear that there are only two types of people in the world, those that exhibit clonal hematopoiesis and those that are going to develop clonal hematopoiesis, says Kenneth Walsh, who directs the Hematovascular Biology Center at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. The growing evidence has taken heart researchers aback. Dr. Peter Libby, a cardiologist at Brigham and Women's Hospital and professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, calls CHIP the most important discovery in cardiology since statins. CHIP was discovered independently by several groups of researchers who were not even investigating heart disease. Mostly, they were looking at the genes of patients who might develop leukemia or, in one research project, schizophrenia. The scientists searched databases from genetic studies involving tens of thousands of people whose DNA had been obtained from their white blood cells. To their great surprise, the teams converged on the same phenomena. Unexpectedly large numbers of study participants had blood cells with mutations linked to leukemia, but they did not have the cancer. Instead, they had just one or two of the cluster of mutations. This clearly wasn't happening by chance, said Stephen McCarroll, a geneticist at the Broad Institute in Harvard Medical School. We knew we were on to something, but what were we on to? The investigators quickly guessed the broad outlines. White blood cells, the attack dogs of the immune system, arise from stem cells in the bone marrow. Every day, a few hundred such stem cells spew out blood cells that begin dividing rapidly into the 10 billion needed to replace those that have died. Sometimes by chance, one of these marrow stem cells acquires a mutation, and the white blood cells it produces carries the same mutation. Some mutations are just markers of past events without any lasting consequence, says Dr. David Stenasma, a blood cancer specialist at Harvard Medical School and Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. But others, especially those linked to leukemia, seem to give stem cells a new ability to accumulate in the marrow. The result is a sort of survival of the fittest or fastest growing stem cells in the marrow. Some mutations may alter the growth properties of the stem cell, Steensma said. Some may just make the stem cell better at surviving in certain less hospitable parts of the bone marrow, where other stem cells can't thrive. The mutated stem cells outlast normal stem cells in the marrow. and their progeny, an increasing percentage of white blood cells, show up in the blood with mutations. But the big surprise came when researchers looked at the medical records of people with these white blood cell mutations. They had 54% increase in the odds of dying within the next decade compared to people without CHIP, and the cause, heart attacks and strokes. Dr. Benjamin Ebert, chair of medical oncology at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, was the first to see the link. He turned for help to Dr. Sikar Kathiresan, a cardiologist and genetics researcher at Mass General Hospital and the Broad Institute, who had genetic data from four more large studies. They confirmed that CHIP doubled the risk of heart attack in typical patients and increased the risk fourfold in those who had had heart attacks early in life. But how might mutated white blood cells cause heart disease? One clue intrigued scientists. Artery obstructing plaque is filled with white blood cells, smoldering with inflammation and subject to rupture. Perhaps mutated white blood cells were causing atherosclerosis or accelerating its development. For decades, people have worked on inflammation as a cause of atherosclerosis, Ebert said, but it was not clear what initiated the inflammation. Now there is a possible explanation, and Ebert said it raises the possibility that CHIP may be involved in other inflammatory diseases like arthritis. From the Costco Connection magazine, Harper on Heart Health. After a heart attack nearly took his life, Bob Harper changed his outlook. Fitness guru Bob Harper, of The Biggest Loser fame, is known for his challenging workouts on and off the screen. If he wasn't pushing others to do their physical limits, he was posting his own tough workouts on social media. But it all came crashing to a halt when Harper suffered a heart attack on February 12, 2017. He details his experience along with a heart-healthy eating and exercise regimen in his latest book, The Super Carb Diet. He spoke by phone from his New York City home, emphasizing the importance of a balanced, healthy lifestyle. Sneak attack. The kind of heart attack that Harper suffered is colloquially known as a widowmaker. Only 6 to 10% of people survive one. It's caused by underlying genetic conditions that Harper wasn't aware he had. He has no recollection of the day. Everything he knows about the event was secondhand information. In the middle of his workout, he lay down on the floor of his CrossFit gym and became unresponsive. He had to be revived with an automated external defibrillator and was put in a medically induced coma for 2 days. Harper, who says he was very type A and prone to stress before, explains that the heart attack made him reevaluate his priorities. "I really do know that life can turn on a dime," he states, "and I don't want to spend the rest of my life just thinking I've got to have the perfect abs or I've got to make sure that I'm doing everything right. Life's about being kind. It's about forgiving yourself." As he began recovering, Harper worried that people would think of a fitness celebrity having a heart attack. He also struggled with trusting his heart to support an active lifestyle again. He says he suffered an identity crisis. But he decided to go public about his experience, posting videos of himself struggling to complete a stress test. He was relieved when the public rallied around him. "It was really emotional and super helpful because people could all understand a setback," he says. Harper now feels he's able to connect with a whole new audience that didn't necessarily have their eyes on him before. A new protocol. Managing stress is one of the key outcomes of Harper's experience, as stress has a negative impact on heart health. He says he's found a way to relax and take a refreshed approach to fitness. He's incorporated more yoga into his regime and frequently walks with his dogs, Carl and Vivian. "I want to feel good, and if I don't want to push too hard, I'm not going to push too hard anymore," says Harper. He's also rebalancing his plate adding back certain types of carbohydrates, such as 100% whole grains, that he had previously avoided. This approach to nutrition and exercise is the crux of the Super Carb Diet book. There have been so many diets out there that have eliminated major food groups to achieve a goal, and what I wanted to do was just balance your plate again. I want you to make sure you're having protein, fat, and carbs at every single meal, says Harper. The word carb has become a four-letter word, and it shouldn't be. It should be a good fuel source that works for you and enhances your workout. Harper's advice in the Super Carb Diet hasn't swayed from emphasizing nutrition and exercise. The book also includes 13 high-intensity interval training workouts. But what's different about this book, compared with others he's written, is the emphasis on stress. Harper, quoting one of his doctors, says, "Stress affects if and when you will work out. Stress affects if you do make or don't make the right food choices in the course of the day. Everything that you do in life is going to be somehow orchestrated by where your stress levels are for any given day. Whether you're coming back from your own medical setback, gaining momentum on new resolutions, or simply looking for extra support, Harper's new read is sure to get you moving in the right direction." Again, the book is called The Super Carb Diet by Bob Harper. Show yourself some love. Gain key heart health insights. February is Heart Health Month, a good time to take a look at ways to achieve or maintain a healthy heart. Heart disease causes one out of four deaths in America, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Here's a look at the main risks and lifestyle factors for heart disease and some steps to take a reverse of those risks. High blood pressure, also known as hypertension, is a leading risk factor for heart disease. Approximately 75 million American adults have high blood pressure. According to the CDC, clinical guidelines state that blood pressure level of 120 over 80 is normal. 121 to 129 over 80 is elevated, and 130 over 80 or greater is considered high or hypertensive, according to the American Heart Association. The upper number, known as the systolic, indicates how much pressure your blood is exerting in your arteries when the heart beats, while the lower number, known as the diastolic, indicates how much pressure your blood is exerting in your arteries while the heart is resting between beats. High cholesterol. There are two types of cholesterol: low-density lipoprotein, or LDL, and high-density lipoprotein, or HDL, cholesterol. LDL is considered bad or unhealthy, as too much can lead to cholesterol buildup in arteries. HDL is considered good or healthy, as it helps remove cholesterol from the bloodstream and arteries. The American Heart Association recommends getting your cholesterol levels checked and discussing with your physician your overall heart disease risk and determining healthy cholesterol levels for you. Other risk factors. It's important to assess other lifestyle risk factors, such as diabetes, being overweight or obese, and physical inactivity. Smoking is also a major risk factor for heart disease. Individuals who smoke are 6 times more likely to suffer heart attacks, according to the CDC. To address these risk factors, you can take a few steps. Number one, strive for normal blood glucose levels, 100 milligrams per deciliter of blood or less. Your doctor may want you to perform a fasting blood sugar test to check your levels. Number two, perform 2.5 hours per week of moderately intense aerobic activity, such as walking briskly. Three, quit smoking. And finally, four, maintain a healthy body weight. When consulting with your health care professional, make sure to learn your status for various risk factors in order to develop an effective health and wellness regimen. Oral fixation. Focusing on your mouth reveals a lot about your overall health. When your dentist peers into your mouth, she isn't just checking for cavities and gum disease. She's also looking for signs of oral cancer, diabetes, acid reflux, and more. If she spots anything worrisome, she'll send you to a doctor. For so long, dentistry and medicine were on their own separate entities, says American Dental Association spokesperson Dr. Sally Cram, a periodontist in Washington, D.C. It has become more commonplace now for physicians and dentists to work together. Dentists have become frontline health care providers, screening for chronic health conditions. We have an advantage over the physicians because we see patients more frequently, normally twice a year, possibly three or four times, says Dr. Joseph V. Franco, Jr., an assistant professor and assistant director of dental clinics at Creighton University School of Dentistry in Omaha, Nebraska. I think we have a better rapport with the patients from seeing them more often. Dentists may be concerned by the following common symptoms. Bleeding gums. Bleeding gums are a classic sign of periodontal disease, but if they don't improve with treatment, you may have other problems. When somebody goes through the periodontal work, is flossing and brushing, everything looks great, but they're still bleeding. We may suspect type 2 diabetes, Franco says. Mouth sores. Certain sores are signs of human papillomavirus, or HPV, which can develop into cancer. Other sores aren't cancerous, but may indicate other health problems. A common one is shingles, which is very painful, Franco says. We see a lot in the oral cavity. It's a fairly easy one for us to distinguish because shingles never goes past the midline of your mouth. Damaged enamel. Long-term exposure to acid can wear away the protective enamel on teeth. People with gastroesophageal reflux disease or bulimia often have stomach acid in their mouths, which causes problems that only dentists see. On the inside, the enamel will be all gone, and the teeth will have a yellow color, Franco says. On the lip side, the teeth are white, the normal color. Dry mouth. Diabetes, Sjögren's syndrome, antidepressants, and blood pressure medications can cause dry mouth, which makes you prone to cavities. The first thing we're going to look at is the patient's medication list, because I think that's the most common reason for dry mouth, Franco says. If you don't have that saliva, that food just sits there on your teeth all day. Bad breath. Poor oral hygiene habits and periodontal disease are the usual culprits. If bad breath persists, stomach acid may be to blame. They could have gastric reflux, which could be giving them bad breath. Sugary breath is also concerning. Sweet-smelling candy breath is an indication of our uncontrolled diabetics, says Dr. Diane Sullivan, a clinical associate professor at the University of Texas Health Science Center and San Antonio School of Dentistry. And then finally, tooth loss. Older patients are more likely to lose teeth. Osteoporosis may play a role, but poor brushing is often to blame, especially among patients with dementia. They may lose dexterity in their ability to provide oral care for themselves, Sullivan says. Maybe they don't have the hand strength or the grip to hold the toothbrush properly or to floss. By seeing your dentist regularly, you can stay on top of your overall health. A lot of times when we see something, it's in the early stages, and it's really easy to correct. From the Harvard Health Letter, sodium in groceries on the decline. The amount of sodium we're bringing home from the grocery store has dropped significantly in the past two decades, according to a study published online June 5, 2017 by JAMA Internal Medicine. Excess sodium intake is associated with a higher risk of heart disease. Researchers analyzed the sodium in about 1.5 million products purchased by more than 172,000 households in the United States from 2000 to 2014. Sodium in packaged foods brought into these homes declined from about 2,300 milligrams per person per day to about 1,500 milligrams per person per day. The declines were seen in all kinds of products, especially those notoriously high in sodium, like condiments, sauces, dips, and salty snacks. The study can't tell us if the amount of sodium people consume is also declining, but it's a good reminder to keep an eye on your intake since a salty diet can lead to high blood pressure, a major risk factor for heart disease and stroke. The American Heart Association says an ideal limit is 1,500 milligrams of sodium per day for most adults. That's hard to achieve, but being a savvy shopper for lower sodium foods can help. More over-the-counter hearing aids on the way. As we reported recently, the FDA has been debating whether to create a class of over-the-counter hearing aids to inspire new products costing hundreds, not thousands, of dollars. Congress and the President pushed the effort forward over the summer, approving the Over-the-Counter Hearing Aid Act in August. It gives the FDA 3 years to establish the over-the-counter hearing aid category and develop safety and labeling rules for the devices. Last December, the FDA said it would no longer require adults to receive a medical evaluation or sign a waiver before purchasing most hearing aids. So now people with mild to moderate hearing loss don't need a doctor's prescription to get an over-the-counter hearing aid and don't need to see an audiologist for a fitting. OTC hearing devices aren't the same as prescription hearing aids, however. They're amplification devices, and they may not be right for your particular type of hearing problem. Without an evaluation by a doctor, an underlying condition may go undiagnosed. Discuss the risks and benefits with your primary care doctor. Older adults are drinking more alcohol. Heavy alcohol drinking, abuse, or dependence among older adults is rising at unprecedented rates, suggests a study published online August 9, 2017 by JAMA Psychiatry. The authors analyzed information about alcohol use among 43,000 adults ages 18 or older during 2001 to 2002, and then compared it with information about alcohol use among 36,000 adults during 2013, in virtually all age, race, and socioeconomic groups, high-risk drinking and alcohol abuse and dependence increased over the decade. Among all age groups, the increase tended to be greater in people who were less affluent, less well-educated, and members of a racial minority group. Although during both time periods, adults ages 65 and older had lower rates than younger people, the increase in high-risk drinking, 65%, and alcohol abuse, 107%, was greatest in this older age group. The study authors emphasize that older adults are at higher risk for disability, illness, and death from many alcohol-related chronic diseases, falls, and injuries. Your best bet, if you drink alcohol, limit it to one drink per day if you're a woman, and one or two if you're a man. We've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.